Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding all my life.
Here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Live in studio on another beautiful Wednesday. This streak of, what, 83, 85 degrees, high 60s in the morning continues. This is beautiful. Darren, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. I'm. This is, like you said, a beautiful day. Down to 265 pounds, you know, 30-day challenge over again.
Look at you go.
Yeah.
What's that, 70 total?
70.
Nice, man. Yeah. And what, 3 months?
2.5.
Dude, awesome.
Yeah, so I can't rest on my laurels, though. I still got more sexiness to come, so I got to get down to closest 200 if possible. You know, it's, trust me, it was, you know, even though I dropped 51st, it was harder this time around. Drop it because I did have some cheat days in between, but it's a grind, but I don't plan on stopping. I like the idea, not that it's quote unquote losing weight, but just the idea that
getting healthy. It's
well, that too. I mean, people have no idea the amount of water I drink. Like at training camp every morning, I'm going through like 6 or 7 bottles.
Oh, easy.
It's just, and it's not even hot. It's just, I'm just doing that, and then, you know, I'll run to the, you know, Johnny Be Good or whatever you call it, Johnny on the spot, like 3 times before practice over with. They, you know, and everybody know what's going on, so they just, you know, like, hey, let him do his thing. But, no, doing good, and I even pulled out an old calling card for you, man. I got Jeff Chedea coming on Friday since you wasn't in studio.
Hell so yeah, let's go.
I called him and said, hey, man, you know, Sterling wasn't here. Can we get you on? Yeah, man, let's do it. I said, good. So we'll get a chance to have your conversation with him. Look, later on in the show, we'll be joined by Coach Tom Lester. Want to get some more U.S. Olympic talk going on in the show. We'll talk track and field, men's basketball, the USA kicking major league butt in getting and just accumulating wealth in these medals. So we'll talk about that in the second segment, but. Sterling, I mean, as usual, we can start with training camp or, you know, whatever you feel happy. I mean, I see the Lakers keep getting more players to come in, so.
And we'll talk about that because I do want to say the Lakers have done a better job of rounding out.
I tell you?
Hold on. They've done a better job.
What did I tell
you? Not there yet.
No. But I'm saying when they first signed Westbrook and stuff, I said, man, and then Dwight Howard, you know, I said, dude. Calm down. Let them finish filling out their roster and stuff.
It won't matter until we see the starting lineup. Matter. No. It won't matter if they don't start AD at the five. It will all be for naught. If they start AD at the five.
Well, let's see who else they bring in still.
Sure. But there's still a long way to go to see if the plan's going to work out.
But you got to keep one thing in mind. You also got to figure out, you know, cause whether you have AD at the four or the five, you got to make sure that there's enough spacing with whoever else is going to be in that starting lineup.
Well, that's why Dwight Howard cannot be on the floor with AD. Or LeBron, or Russell Westbrook, because that is just zero spacing.
I agree.
I do want to give a shout-out to my dad. He had hip surgery, and he's now out of hip surgery doing some physical therapy right now, and the surgery went well. He had bone on bone.
Eesh.
So I want to give my dad a shout-out because he's doing all better now.
Shout-out to dad.
Yeah. Got to give a shout-out to dad, right?
You don't really have to, but
I got you.
But the fact that you did makes you a good son.
He couldn't golf, so you know it was killing him. That's how you know it's serious. When he can't, if he's not golfing, you know it's a serious situation.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
Pretty serious. Well, look, man, today up in St. Joe, got a chance. I don't know what it was, but we all took a liking to like the one-on-one drills that the linemen were going, that they were having today. The fact that my guy, Trey Smith, whew. Trey Smith is going to be in that starting lineup. Creed Humphrey did pretty good today. Actually, to be quite honest, they all did well. I mean, you know, the first team did well against that defensive line of the Chiefs, and the battle I enjoyed watching was Frank Clark going up against Lucas Niang. And Niang was holding his own. Chris Jones, going up against Orlando Brown. After what took place yesterday, Brown was able to hold his own. But, man, I got to tell you, man, I've told you, I've been focusing, really, when I go up there, all I'm generally watching with my binoculars is watching that offensive line and how they protect Patrick. And Patrick's going to have so much time. It's so much time in the backfield. It's criminal, dude. I mean, literally, if this offensive line as the way that it's shaping up to be, well, you're starting essentially three rookies because Niang hadn't played down, so he's a rookie. Bruh, I can't. Oh, that's good. That's good. It is going to be criminal if Patrick Mahomes doesn't have another 40, 50 touchdowns this season, because he's going to have all the time in the world. And if he doesn't do well, he's got no one to blame but himself.
No, I honestly think, though, the biggest takeaway of the offensive line is going to be the running game. I know I'm not a massive fan of the running game. You know that. But when it comes to short yardage situations, if I never have to see one of those trick Blake Bell screen passes again, I will be ecstatic. And I'm not all against trick plays. I'm not all against letting Andy Reid do what he does best, and that's draw up plays creatively that no one else seems to be able to do. I'm not saying take all of them away, but when you have a 3rd-and-1 on the goal line, when you have a 4th-and-1, we've seen the Kansas City Chiefs' red zone struggles, and sure, you could say red zone struggles a little bit of it is out of proportion because they're still top 15 in the red zone, top 10, but compared to what their offense typically does from the 20 to 20, you expect more success. I think we'll see more success. We'll see more holes for Clyde. It's going to be much easier falling forward 1 yard. We won't see any more Patrick Mahomes QB sneaks. I think that's done and gone with. I know it's a freak accident. I understand that. But with this offensive line being as good as it is, they should be able to hand the ball off to Clyde and get 1 yard. They struggled because they couldn't do it the past 2 years. They should be now. I'm very excited to see this.
Well, let me tell you this. If Clyde can't get it, I can assure you Darrell Williams will. They did some goal line stuff today, and depending on how you look, I mean, because I think that they gave him four. I think they gave him like 3 cracks at it, even though they scored. Because I know the first time they got down on the goal line play, Patrick threw it to Mecole Hardman, in a touchdown. I could have sworn that the running back, I think it might have been Clyde, it could have been Williams, got the ball over the goal line because they tried to run it through, and then they did it. Then I think on third down, they got it in again. But that offensive line is able to get a massive push. I didn't get a chance to ask Spags a question today, but I am curious because I've always said that the Chiefs defense should be much better than what they were statistically, simply because you're going up against Patrick, Kelce, Tyreek, McCollum on a day-to-day basis. So you would think just by osmosis, you should be much better than what your ranking is. I'm hoping, maybe calling naivety, but I believe that when you've got this offensive line, and it's such a massive offensive line going up against this defensive line, unit, when you've got Jaren Reed, Chris Jones, Clark, Nottie, and just whoever's on there. Oh gosh, it's just all up in my grill. I'm hoping that iron sharpens iron, because I expect Patrick not to get touched, period, just because he's wearing a yellow jersey, so he shouldn't get touched. But if this defensive line can make pressure or can make some movement. It's funny, I guess it goes both ways. If they can make movement against his offensive line, that's a good thing. But if they do, it's also a bad thing, because it means that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So, I mean, in a way, you got all pro. And
you're
Chris
giving
Jones.
Them a can't win situation.
I know.
Dude. You're giving
I
them
know.
A can't win.
But that, but again, if but that's you, the case, you that's can, a good thing, though.
But you can also tell when someone
some
has a good
move. Have better
yeah,
days.
You can tell when someone's on and when someone's off. You can tell when someone gets pushed back because of a certain reason or not. You can kind of tell. One thing I do want to say is I heard Noah Gray and Travis Kelce were doing fantastic against linebackers.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. It's one-on-one drills.
No, hold on,
you should be doing great against
there
them.
There was hold on, now, there was a blocking drill where I don't know if it was I don't think it was Gay, but someone
–
Yes, someone threw Noah Gray into the dirt, and I thought it was so
hilarious.
Heard
Kelsey got pushed back once, twice.
No. Kelsey got it handed to him a few times.
Yeah, I heard the blocking drills, linebackers won, but when it came to the receiving drills, tight ends really crushed him one-on-one. And it's going to happen when you have the best tight end in football, one of the best all-time tight ends, going up against guys who are rookies and second-year guys in Willie Gay Jr., Nick Bolton. You're going to get beat here and there.
Yeah, I was joking with Kelsey, like, and man, you probably said, look, man, I'm all pro, man. I ain't got to go through this. But fortunately, what he said in his press conference, that, you know, he's asking for more rest because of the time that he missed when his back tightened up. Obviously, Tyreek Hill, you know, didn't practice today. There were a few players that kind of left practice early today.
Good amount, and nothing to be too alarmed yet. I think it's just, you're early on. If you feel any sort of twinge, you feel any sort of I'm not 100%, there's no reason, especially if you have a roster spot locked up, to push it. If you're Tyreek, if you're Travis, if you're Mahomes, if you're one of the big names in the O-line, there is no reason to try and push through any sort of minor injury. Your spot's safe. Now, if you are a Marcus Kemp, if you are a Garrett Dieter, a Jody Fortson, you might start pushing. If you're that D-back key, you might start pushing. DeAndre Bay. So it's a fine line of you want to go because you want to get your roster spot, but you also don't want to get hurt because if you get hurt, that may put your roster spot in more jeopardy than anything. I do want to say Darwin Thompson came back today. I don't think he's going to be making the roster.
Look good blocking today. Yeah. It, you know, and Eric Bieniemy is back in the backfield, and you know, as a former running back, you know it pains him when it. He also was just coming off the COVID, off of the 14 days too. So I'm gonna cut him a little bit of slack, but yeah, he did not look good in practice today.
Yeah, Darwin's probably gonna be not. If the Chiefs only keep three running backs, he's not one of them. The three that are locks are Jerick McKinnon, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams. Those three are locks to make the roster. I don't think they're going to keep four running backs. I don't know where this is going to put Darwin. I don't know if he's even allowed to be on the practice squad at this point.
Damn, allowed.
So, I don't know. That is going to be an interesting development to see what happens to him. I wish the best for Darwin, but he never really got anything going in his time here. Six-round draft pick. A lot of fans in Chiefs Kingdom had high hopes for Darwin. Obviously a stud in college, but it never really panned to the NFL. It's not like he didn't have chances. I mean,
he had opportunity. I believe he started. He started a game and played in the Super Bowl, I believe.
Yeah,
so.
A lot of injuries to the running backs, to the running back room, and he never seemed to jump up and take it. This might be the deepest as far as three guys that Kansas City's had since, what, almost Mahomes has gotten here? Because even with Kareem Hunt, you had Kareem Hunt, but you didn't have a great depth behind him.
Now yeah, unfortunately, he didn't, I don't think he ever really got injured.
But I'm not saying he didn't need it or not. I'm just saying you really have three guys who I think could start: Darrell, Jerick McKinnon, and Clyde, and I'm happy with. So Kansas City has a lot of depth right now at running back, which is great for them, not good for Darwin.
Yeah, and just looking at the numbers, you know, again, I think because of the Super Bowl, I think they're going to keep more offensive linemen than they probably would. Granted, they can still trade and see what you can get for some of the players, but I like the depth that they're going to have, and they're going to have it at different places. The one place I'm wondering whether or not they will sacrifice a running back and carry more tight ends might be the tight end, because people are I know my guy Herbie, he loves him some Jody Fortson. I know he talked to, and he asked a few coaches about that today. Fortson has been looking very well in practice, and of course, you know, you think of Blake Bell, you think of Noah Gray,
Nick Kizer.
Hard. Again, you know, so you're looking at five tight ends right there. And so, I mean, after 3 years on the practice squad and trying to make the team as a wide receiver, now, you know, he's
Kelvin Benjamin experiment, but let's see if it actually works when a guy takes it seriously.
Because he has looked extremely well throughout training camp, blocking, catching, just being in the right position, his hands. The dude has been great thus far in training camp with and without pads.
So with the offensive line, they're not going to keep everyone. I would say at least one guy is going to have to be on the move at a minimum. I don't know who it's going to be. I think the three guys who are the easiest to point at is Allegretti, Austin Blythe, and Wiley. I think those three guys are the three guys you look at and say,
I ain't gonna lie, man. If it wasn't for his contract, boy, the doctor showed him
sure.
good today.
No, LDT would be gone if it wasn't for his contract. And still, they may say, screw it. We think that it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Because no one's trained for LDT.
I think you keep him just because you got paid him.
And no one's trained for him because of the contract. Wiley, you might get something for. Austin Blythe, Nick Allegretti, you might get something for. But I think at least one of those guys will be on the move before training camp. Of those three, I think that's the three the Chiefs either trade or is not going to be here come week one.
Good thing is, of course, now tomorrow night, Hall of Fame game, Cowboys, Steelers. Looking forward to that. Obviously, next week we're looking. You know, next week we've got the Chiefs Chiefs out of San Francisco next week. Is it San Francisco or Phoenix? I think it's San Francisco. But anyway, they play next Saturday, so there'll be a camp Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. They got Wednesday and Friday off. I should know this because I'll be there.
I think starting after this Sunday, we'll have football every Sunday through February.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Robert Randolph and the family.
I'm getting excited
would be
about
stoked.
It. I somebody posted it on my timeline, and I was like, "That is true." I hadn't thought about it because I'm thinking, okay, the Cowboys play Thursday, and then there's no game Sunday because, you know, they have 5 weeks. They have five games, and I'm like, man, so after next weekend, yeah, there's football games on every weekend. I think there's not a game on that Labor Day Sunday because you got like 11 days off, but you've got college football. So the fact that all this is coming back and we're in August, it's August 4th. I just realized KU football, because I looked at the email, they're starting their camp and they're practicing and stuff up. I'm like, man. But theirs is the same time as the Chiefs. So, I mean, what do you think I'm going to be? Lawrence, St. Joe. Yeah, I'm going to stick with St. Joe at the moment.
Some NFL news. Philip Rivers said he's not ruling out the possibility of a comeback.
They talked about that actually with Indianapolis, you know, because of Carson Wentz.
They talked about it there. He said he's not quite ready yet. He wants to do it for a late season push. Like, he wants to be on a team. If a guy gets injured late in the season and they're going to make the playoffs, I think Philip Rivers is saying, yeah, I want to be the guy then. He's going to stay in shape. Obviously, the Colts make the most logical conclusion right now. He said he's not ready yet. He said it's going to take a little bit to get completely back to where he's at. He's 39. I mean, even though he took, like, what, 3 months off? When you're 39, that's a lot of rust to get off that slingshot arm motion he has.
True.
So, who knows? But if he can ramp up early, that does make a lot of sense for the Colts. He's someone who just knows the system. He just took you to the playoffs. That's at least something to keep your eye on.
Wouldn't hurt with Minnesota either.
Kirk Cousins.
Just because of the COVID situation, I know they're going to be out for a couple of weeks, but hell, I heard, you know, that they might be interested in Deshaun Watson, so you just never know. And looking at that, if I'm Phil Rivers, I would think about, because I know we had this conversation yesterday, I would think about signing another one-year deal with the Indianapolis Colts. One, the team is ready made. I mean, you just took them to the playoffs last year, so it's not like you don't know the offensive line. Like, you can't just go right back in there. And as long as your conditioning is what it, you know, is up to par, I think him going back to Indianapolis would not be a bad thing at all.
Now that Quentin Nelson is out, though, does Philip Rivers say, you know what, maybe I wait until he comes back? He's the best guard in football. I don't want to take any sacks. I don't want to get hit. Give me at least a couple weeks. Once Quentin's back, then maybe I'll start considering my comeback.
Well, first of all, they wouldn't offer minimum wage, so he would still come back if the money's right. You forget he's got 9 kids, so he has no problem, you know.
I thought it was 11 for sure. It may be more. He's got a lot of kids.
It might be 11. I think he does have a football team. I think he does have an offensive squad. So, but to that point, look, man, there are other things. You know, Mike Shanahan is saying that
Trey Lance is looking good and he's pushing Jimmy Garoppolo, but a lot of people are tripping on the fact that, you know, he's talking about, you know, doing this whole wait and see type deal with Trey Lance. And I'm of the adage, look, man, if he's good enough to play in the start, you need to be having him practicing with the ones, man. I swear I don't get it. I mean, I understand if you have a proven starter, you know, like when Patrick came in under Alex Smith. To me, that's one reason why you don't draft Deshaun Watson, because it's kind of hard to justify that. But if you look at that situation, like, even to be honest, Justin Fields, I don't know how you feel, but I'm more convinced that Justin Fields should be the starter versus Andy Dalton. I know you're probably sure going that route because you signed him to a contract and told him that, but still, I mean.
I would be, well, again, it all depends too. Do you think he's actually ready week one? Because if you actually think he's ready week one, there's no quicker way to lose a locker room than go with a guy who's older, who's less talented, just because you want to prove a point and make a guy earn it. I understand that, but if you're a team and you're trying to win games, you don't care who's there, you want to win. If you're a Bears player,
that too. Plus, you also look at the pedigree. Like, and I go back to Deshaun because it's easy to do. But when Deshaun came out of college and he went to the Texans, you know, he was behind Blaine Gabbert, somebody of that ilk, and it's like
Matt Schaub or something like that.
And it's like, wait a second, man, this dude just played two national titles and won one. What makes you think he needs to be sitting on the bench and he just played in front of 100,000 people twice at the highest level? He's ready to play. He's ready to start. Starting right away. And I say that like, because if you don't have like a Trey Lance or Justin Fields practicing, taking risks with the ones in practice in training camp now, it's going to be hard for them to get that to get that camaraderie with them when the season starts if they get thrust in there, because they haven't had a chance to practice with them. They've only been practicing with the twos and the scout team.
The only thing I would say is you don't want a Tua situation, because that was bad for Miami.
But Tua was coming off of an injury too.
Sure, and that was a huge part.
And they did just thrust him. I mean, no, I don't agree with that. I'm with you on that.
I agree 100% because Tua was, but he is of that ilk. Tua was the face for a long time in Alabama. You know, he was a stud. He was as ready as you could be, right? And because he wasn't necessarily NFL ready, they had to throw Ryan Fitzpatrick back in there occasionally. They ended up making the playoffs, but it was a back-and-forth situation. If you're the Bears, if you're the Niners, you want to wait until they're fully ready to take over.
Yeah, but again,
and ready for the rest of the year, but rather than just a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, but again, you're talking about a player who was coming off an injury that didn't get a chance to finish. Because he didn't get a chance to finish the season because he had gotten injured. And take it back, he played in that championship game and they got beat, but he was injured, and then, of course, he had COVID, and he had surgery on his hip. So he had the Bo Jackson injury. And so that's another thing. I mean, you're talking about somebody like a – because, again, what makes Trevor Lawrence that much more ready to play than a Justin Fields? It's just a scenario of the team that he gone to.
I mean, I think Trevor Lawrence is clearly better than Justin Fields. I think that you
I wouldn't say that.
I think you can make a case of –
they were both 1 and 2 coming out of
sure.
high school. So I mean,
think
I don't
you could
see
say Zach Wilson for the Jets. You could say Wilson, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance. I think those three guys you could say, and I don't even think Mac Jones in that category. I know you kind of were higher on Mac Jones than I was just because he was at Alabama. I just don't think Mac Jones is going to be an NFL quarterback. That's my feeling.
No. The only two players out of this draft that I feel ready to start day one is Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. I mean, Mac Jones has.
I'm not. I don't think Mac Jones is going to start.
Yeah, no, no.
I think Zach Wilson's ready to.
Well, it's just the Jets. I mean, hell, you can
and
start.
I think
him.
I think Trey Lance is ready too. I think Trey Lance is going to be.
But what makes you say Trey Lance? I mean, because first of all, that's division two or whatever, or division one, whatever, 1AA. So what makes Trey Lance?
If you watch Trey Lance, ready? He jumps off the page. He jumps off.
Have you watched Justin Fields?
100%. He did not jump off, especially against high competition. He just didn't do it.
He led his team
same thing like Mac Jones.
He led his team to the playoffs, both years as a starter.
My point is, he reminds me more of a Mac Jones, where he is there because he has a great team around him. Well, Trevor Lawrence, obviously, I think
Trevor Lawrence had a great team around him.
But you could tell that he made that team better. You could tell that just that. You could tell that Trey Lance made that team better. You could tell that Zach Wilson made that team better. I think that Ohio State. I don't think Justin Fields. You could throw other guys in that situation. They would be similar. Mac Jones. I think you could throw. You could throw in a lot of guys in that situation. They would have been similar.
Sterling, you kill me sometimes. ESPN is telling me my ESPN Plus is about to go up $1. I'm not having that. I'm canceling my subscription.
What's it going? $6.99?
$6.99.
Damn, Darren.
Bro, hey, it's rough out here in these streets. Bro, I'm telling you, let me see, Ohio State. So, man, when I look at Ohio State and look at these Buckeyes, man, nope. No. Because you're like, I don't have it.
I'll pull a game from memory. Do you remember him against, was it Michigan?
Okay, first of all, again.
Bleep the bet.
Okay.
Do you remember him?
Hold on. That's what I hate, Sterling. You go on one game. But I can say the same thing about a bad game that
Trevor Lawrence
had.
Sure.
Trevor Lawrence, okay.
But
so
I think it's pretty easy to say Trevor Lawrence was the best quarterback in this draft. Bar none, right? That's not
nobody's. That wasn't the argument, Sterling.
No,
we're talking about day one being ready.
My point is, I think Trevor Lawrence is ready day one. I think Trey Lance is ready day one. I said Justin Fields. I think is ready day one because I think he's better than Andy Dalton.
Okay. Well,
I'm not disagreeing there. I mean, Justin Fields is better than Andy Dalton. I'll give you that. That's not what I'm debating.
Again. Ready day one to start. Now you're talking about a kid who went 20-2,
sure,
at Ohio State,
sure.
But you're trying to tell me that he's not ready day one starter. I mean,
I think he's a ready day one starter. I don't think he's going to be a superstar like Trevor Lawrence.
Said day one starter as Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence,
choose Trevor Lawrence. Is my point. That's my point. I would choose.
It wasn't a choose situation.
Zach Wilson.
I said out of the five quarterbacks that were drafted, I said Justin Fields.
I'm fine
Trevor
with all
Lawrence,
of them starting except for Mac Jones. I'm fine with all of them starting except for Mac Jones.
Zach Wilson shouldn't be starting day one, but the fact that he plays for the Jets, he's thrust. He has to.
We'll disagree. You don't like Zach Wilson for a reason. I don't get it.
Nothing against him at BYU. Oh, come on. Dude.
See, you go off of programs more so than you should.
Oh, so what you're saying is Patrick should
Mahomes
have been,
didn't go to Alabama. Mahomes didn't go to Ohio State.
So by your standards, Mahomes should have been starting day one in Kansas City.
No, because they had a great team in place. They had a playoff situation in place.
Okay, time to go to break.
It all depends on situations,
Oh,
Darren.
Now it depends on situations. Okay.
Of course it depends on situations.
Okay.
Hell, Justin Fields wouldn't be starting right now in New England probably because you have Cam Newton there. Right? Is that fair?
Yeah,
Trey Lance probably wouldn't be starting.
If he fell to 15, I don't know. If he fell to 15, I don't know. But
all right.
Let's take a break. Let's bring Coach Lester on. Let's switch subjects to the Olympics. Definitely going to talk some track and field. It's just... Gosh, I am about to be in my zone right now with all these relay races and these finals coming up. So keep it locked in. You're listening to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, 1510 AM and 1510.com. With us, and I know that's Johnny B. Good. That's the song.
Well, we had a joke in the first segment. I forget. You said Johnny B. Good or something like that. You said Johnny B. Good instead of Johnny on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
So that was,
yeah,
I had to get a little.
Yeah,
little
I appreciate
pull.
That. Yeah. Good looking out. With us now, we're joined by Coach Tom Lester of Blue Springs High School. Of course, he's got a chance. He's been in this coaching game for about 35 plus years. He's coached professionals, college, and even high school athletes as he's doing that, being at Blue Springs. Going to talk some Olympics. Tom, how you doing today?
Hey, doing all right. I had a good conversation before I came on the air with Sterling, and he didn't realize that when you were at Lincoln University, you sat at the lunch table maybe 10, 15 feet away from an Olympian, Olympian silver medalist in Lorraine Graham Fenton.
I did more than that. I mean, I've gone through things with Lorraine Graham and a few others. Oh, yeah. So I know exactly what I was doing back then. I was getting myself prepared for a day like this.
There you go. Like I said, Lorraine was someone that I coached back in Lincoln, and she went on. She was a top 10 in the world 400 runner, and at D2, Woman Athlete of the Year, and from Little Lincoln University. So, like I said, that was 21 years ago, and we are here today, probably a little bit past the midway point of the Olympics. And I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm going to say slightly disappointed. I could characterize it like this. We've seen some great things, and maybe the greatest single event on the track in Olympic history in the men's 400 hurdles.
Oh, God,
with
yes.
As an event that I thought was going to be a great dual race. And then we've also been kind of mildly disappointed with the United States in some other areas.
Well, you know, look, the biggest takeaway from me is the fact that we've seen some Olympic and even world records being broken. Of course, the 400-meter hurdles, that was the world record that she retained her Olympic gold, and as well as broke the record last night. But the fact that there aren't fans in the stands, I mean, I know you've got, you know, like members of the coaching staff and stuff that are there, but the fact that they're able to break these records or break these times or whatever, and unfortunately, it's not 70,000-100,000 fans there to be able to enjoy it and to see it as it happens. Look, the thing I hate the most is this time zone difference. Like, I have to remember to, like, when I'm up early in the morning, I'm hit up the training camp. I download the Peacock app, so I can kind of watch the track and field stuff. So being able to see Mold yesterday and some of the other races today and yesterday and the last couple of days, that's been good, even though I'll turn around and watch it at night. But it's like knowing how things are already going to turn out because of the time difference. So it kind of makes watching the replay of it kind of anticlimactic when you already see breaking news. The thing, Mo wins 800 at, 800 meters for the women. Then you turn around and try to watch it again later on that evening. So stuff like that has been really hard for me because I haven't been able to watch the basketball games like I want to because it'll be on at 11:15 tonight when I know I have to kind of, or 11:45 like tonight, it'll be on. But I have to, get some rest so I can get up and go to training camp anymore. So stuff like that, that's been the biggest disappointment for me, especially when I wanted to watch the women's gymnastics and I was watching it till Simone Biles had, got injured and stepped out. Because me waking up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, I didn't think it was going to happen. It did. And, now I've been able to get a little bit more sleep because I haven't had to wake up that early again.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, the time zone, and this is the one chance for track and field to shine. And unless you're like a track enthusiast like yourself or myself, we have to get up at 5:30, 8 o'clock, or watch the replay immediately afterwards, or watch it at night. Like I said, very anticlimactic. And we are all conditioned in today's world to watch live things, live sports. We stream things. And we watch sometimes things on replay, but we all want to see things live. We want to see it the moment it happens. We want to see the instant reaction of the athlete and how they are celebrated or how they're disappointed after each race. So I think that obviously takes away from it. I'm going to be real interested in 2024 when it's in Paris, that being a 6 or 7 hour delay, depending on where we are in the United States. Are we going to be able to see those events live at 3 o'clock and, 2, 3 in the afternoon? Are we going to see that live? Are they going to hold us hostage for 4 or 5 hours and wait till 7 o'clock at night? So I'm going to be interested in what they're going to do in Paris in 2024. But so far, I think the stars we thought were going to shine, minus Noah Lyles to shine with Sydney McLaughlin breaking the world record again. I think Mo doing her thing, breaking the American record, doing something that no other female in the United States has done in 50 years when it comes to winning the 800-meter final. I think those things are the expected things. I think those are two 21- and 19-year-old female athletes that we're going to see a lot of maybe on our TV, not only when they compete, but maybe endorsing X, Y, or Z over the next 3 or 4 years.
And I will say this. If the ratings have anything to do with it, NBC is going to have to try to figure something out in 3 years. I'm like you. I think we'll see a lot of stuff in the afternoon. And it was interesting. I was asking Lebo why we hadn't aired anything. And his thought process is because of the time zone that he's thinking. Because I know he said Westwood One is kind of responsible for the stuff that they're able to air. But he said, you know, they did it, I think, when it was in Rio, because it was kind of like the same time zone type deal versus, you know, it being 13 hours ahead. So you'd be looking at programming and stuff, somebody having to be up here, with, you know, late in the midnight hour trying to air a lot of stuff. I will also say, before we go further, I know Strona wants to jump in. I did watch a thing, well, before we came on the air, she was being interviewed by NBC, and they asked her about the 4x400, because I know you and I were texting before the show, and she said that she has made it known. She says that the coaches know that she wants to run it. It's just, it's going to be obviously their decision, and, you know, but she's not going to, like, try to antagonize them either way. She'll just, you know, let them see, you know, let them decide what they want to do. But she said, being diplomatic, she said they have a lot of good runners out there. And so, but if that news article was what it was that I sent you, they could initially have four people running the prelims, and then her and the hurdler and two 4x4, you know, two other women in 400 run the final, so all eight can get gold medals. I like that idea.
Yeah, I do too, but here's what you don't want to happen, which almost happened to the U.S. men's swimming team. I don't know if you follow this. They run a medley, and it's something they've never lost in 20, 30 years, and it's four different strokes, and they put four fresh bodies. They didn't put the four gentlemen that they wanted to in the finals, and they were the next or last qualifier. And they showed the coach that made this decision of not running any of the top four guys in their specific event, their specific stroke. And they just barely squeaked in to the finals. Well, you know, fast forward 24 hours later after that prelim, they broke the world record in the 400 individual medley relay. Now, when it comes to our women's 4x4, I think we have enough talent that we can go eight deep and still defeat any, you know, be a top three or top four team easily going into the finals, which will put, you know, I think they're going to have to put Dalal and Muhammad. They put her in there in Doha in 2019 when she ran 52.16 in the 400 hurdles. Well, she just ran 51.58 yet last night. So you're going to have to think about putting her in that 4x4 too, because she split 49.2. back in Doha in 2019, and she just ran a half a second faster in the 400 hurdles than she did 2 years ago. So there's another candidate. I think the team that the United States to put the best four on the track, you're going to have to put Muhammad, Sydney McLaughlin, Athingmo, and between Allison Felix and Hayes, and, you know, the sentimental favorite will obviously be Allison Felix. You're going to want her to get her ninth or tenth medal. Six of them, I think, have been gold, whether it's in the individual or relay. So those decisions better be made. And whoever's making the relay decision for the United States women's 4x4, if they don't put a thing Mo on it, that's damn near criminal, guys. That's damn near criminal.
That, and she needs to run anchor. Sterling, go ahead.
Where is America trending right now when it comes to track and field as a whole? Are they trending up, down? Are they staying the same? Where is their success level at, and where is it going to be going forward?
I think we've created a lot of great momentum, minus Allison Felix. And like I said, there might be one or two other athletes that I'm missing. Everybody's 21 to 25, and you want to hit your peak professionally in this sport between 25 and 28. Those are your money years, so to speak. Those are the years that you're a professional. You don't have to worry about it being a collegiate athlete, coming off the collegiate season, somewhat being tired and trying to hold your peak for June, July, August, and maybe September. I didn't see exactly what month when the 2024 Olympics are. So all these athletes that we've been talking about, they are 21, 23, 24, 25. So like I said, the one good thing about the Olympics, it's only 3 years away now, guys. So you only have to add 3 years from right now and add their ages. And a lot of those athletes we're talking about, they're going to be in prime 24, 25, 26, 27 years of age, and that's when you hit your most peak. That's when you're not at 30 yet. You're starting to have somewhat of a decline. You can train as hard as you were when you were in college, and you can race as hard. You don't really have to save yourself for your X, Y, and Z races later in the season because of your age. You don't want to take the risk of injury. Hey, I can train hard. I can go over in Europe and run my two or three or four races. I can go to the trials, run my race, come back, maybe run a race before the Olympics and be ready to go. So I think our arrows in about every event is up, and we got our young lady in the 100 meters, our fastest lady in the 100 meters. She wasn't able to run in Sha'Carri Richardson. Her arrow, she's 21. She's going to be 24. So I think in a lot of our events, our arrow is up, and I think whatever we're missing and whatever maybe bad taste we may have in our mouths at the end of this Olympics, which we're not going to have a lot of, I think we're going to be even more excited come 2024.
I will say, though, Arian Knighton would only be 20 years old in Paris.
Right.
I mean, that's scary because I can see him competing in at a minimum three more Olympics, like in Los Angeles, and I forgot where it's going to be in 2032, probably Australia or something like that. But the fact that 17 years old, he can still technically go to college and play college football, but I think his high school career is over with because he signed professionally. But, I mean, the fact that he's, I think, going into his senior season or senior year in high school, and he plays fourth in the Olympics today in the 200-meter course. We'll see it later on tonight on NBC. But if you would, I mean, talk about, because I know we were texting, but talk about, you know, what took place with the 200 today and the winner of the 200, who this gentleman beat when he was in JUCO.
Yes, the gentleman that won the 200-meter, Andre DeGrasse, he has a couple local ties, and you go, hold on, a guy from Canada? What kind of local ties does he have? Well, here are the two local ties. Back in 2013, I was coaching over at Johnson County Community College, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, Coffeyville Community College had this sprinter, and I saw him during the indoor season. He was doing some good things. He was running some very good times, and then he come his outdoor season, and he wins the 100 meters at the JUCO meet. Well, lo and behold, the guy that finished maybe half a body length behind him, Tyreek Hill. So Tyreek Hill finished second, 300ths of a second behind a guy that won a gold medal today. And I it's just funny because Tyreek Hill, if you were to watch Tyreek Hill run then and in high school, he was a very raw. His form was you know, as you would say, Darren, hot garbage. He just was all turnover. If you go and watch Tyreek Hill run the 100 meters in high school, his form was horrible. And I think the later in life that he's got over these last 5, 6, 7 years, his form is, if you watch him on the football field, he runs with grace and form, and he's just gotten stronger. And I'd be interested in Tyreek if he trained for the Olympics, what he would have done today in that 200 meters.
I want to say, Darren always likes to talk about how great of a runner he was in high school. His daughter is an absolute stud. He tried telling me that he could beat her, and what was it, the 100?
Either one or the two. Oh, I could beat her now because she's more of a middle distance runner.
Do you believe that? Do you believe that right now that Darren could beat her?
Well, Darren, okay, 300. Well, Darren, hold on, 335. Yeah. I couldn't. At 265, I might be able to get her. Now, hold on. Now, I done lost 7 pounds now. So don't. Hold on. Hold on.
Don't assure, mean you're getting faster.
A short distance. Hey, look, I take my chances there. Short distance, I take my chances. Now, look, she got me anything over 200.
Dog, you ain't beating me. I ain't touching her. I ain't even getting close. I can guarantee you that.
I'll get back down to 200, you're in trouble.
I use a phrase what Eric Bieniemy used yesterday. I'll let you take it for what it's worth. I'm going to refer to the legend.
You see? First of all, I challenge her from time to time at the house. She don't want none of this.
Then I'll challenge you. You and me. We'll go up to Blue Valley North.
I'm gonna tell you the same thing that Maurice Green told this one guy. We were at a little step show, and the guy tried to race him. I'm not racing you for free. I'm not doing
it. It's for the show.
No, it's not for the show.
It's for the show. Tom's gonna come. He's gonna officiate. He's gonna be making sure
I get down to 200, Sterling. That's fine.
We'll race.
Yeah.
I'll take
it.
No
problem with that. But, you know, look, all that being said, though, I mean, what we've seen thus far, and, I mean, look, we talked about Sha'Carri, what she did in the trials or whatever, but we saw the young lady double up in the 1 and the 200 from Jamaica. To be quite honest, I'm really looking forward to this 4x1. One, you know, for both the men and the women, because it seems as though, the USA, they used to be stuff. We used to just dominate. We used to dominate the 1, the 2. You know, we had Carl Lewis and Michael Johnson and stuff like that. And now it's like, you know, Usain Bolt winning the Olympics, the last three Olympics. And then, of course, gosh, I just forgot who won the other day. But when I think about it, the Americans have not been able to be successful in this 1 and 200 the last few Olympics. And, Tom, I'm wondering, why do you think that is?
Well, I just think one word, Usain Bolt. Two words. We haven't, it's funny because Jamaican men's have kind of dominated the scene since he came on the scene back in 08. Well, Jamaica's men's 4x1 may not even make the final. You know, now conversely, the Jamaican women's, I'll be shocked, and I'll buy you gates if they don't break the world record in the 4x1. I was in London, fortunately, in 2012 when the United States with Carmelita Jeter anchored in 40.82, which at that time, it was like that was a good collegiate men's time. And Jamaican women, they have three girls that have run sub-10.80. And their other girl is coached by Otto Bolden, and she's no slouch either. So if the Jamaican women don't break the world record in the 4x1, I'll be totally shocked, and I'll be going to Gates and buying you a Mitch plate or something.
No, you just now have Darren Rooten against that because he wants that Gates.
Nah, trust me, as much as I want it, we'll just have to do some wings or something, man. I can't eat all that no more.
Yeah. Conversely, on the men's side, it's a toss-up because here's the factor. You know, we had a gentleman just today get second in the 200, Kenny Bednarik. He also is a junior college athlete. He also was not, and I just heard this report today, he did not go with any, and he finished fourth in the 100. Usually the top four guys in the 100, you put those guys together, and there's your 4x1. Well, I heard he wasn't even in the relay camp. He has not done one handoff with any of the other guys that are on the relay. So he may not even be on the 4x1, which is a crime when you have a guy that ran 1968 this morning. He runs a great curve. He'd be a great probably first or third leg on that 4x1. He may not even be on it. So our 4x1 on the men's side, I don't even know who the four are going to be on it. I know Brumell, the gentleman that didn't make the 100 final. Fred Curley, you got Fred Curley there. He's a 400 guy that probably hasn't taken a handoff in four or five or six years. So we have a lot of factors in our men's 4x1. If you look at the history, you know, we haven't won the 4x1 since Maurice Green anchored it in Sydney in 2000. So we've gone 20 years in the Olympics without winning a gold medal in the 4x1. So I don't know what to expect in the men's 4x1. We have the talent, but once again, four guys getting that baton around the track in sub-38. Can we do it? Well, we're going to have to wait and see. Now, the sleeper in that is South Africa. They have some talent to put on the team. They're going to be kind of my team that I'm going to watch with one eye, seeing if maybe they might be able to sneak in and win the gold medal. They have some talent when it comes to the 100 meters.
Tom, we appreciate your time. We're definitely going to get you back on next week as the Olympics close and get some final thoughts on the track and field, especially with the relays. But really thank you for your time. We are up against the clock. You're listening to Darren Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. I feel like we have to talk to some voices.
Gotta miss everybody. I'm gonna miss everybody.
We haven't played Bone Thugs and Harmony in a while. They gotta do it. It was about time. It was due.
Can never go wrong.
It wasn't the first of the month, so I couldn't swing that. It was the fourth. I almost played it and just it was gonna say fourth, just talk over there. Little NBA talk before we finish. Thank you again to Tom Lester coming on, giving us some Olympic updates. Big news in the NBA. Oladipo staying with the Miami Heat on a one-year deal, but maybe the biggest news was Kemba Walker getting bought out by Oklahoma City.
Going to New York.
He is going to go to New York.
New York trying to build him a little squad.
I don't know what Kemba Walker has. I think he's a...
I mean, he's not over the hill. I mean,
he is over the hill, but he's not... Well, he's not what he once was by any means. We saw that in Boston. He was a liability in Boston. He was an absolute problem.
He's not even in his 30s, is he?
Doesn't matter. After the injuries, you saw how slow he was. He was...
Look at Derrick Rose.
Yeah, but Derrick Rose can... Also, yeah, look at Derrick Rose. That's a good example. I'm just saying, Kemba Walker's not what he once was. He's a liability defensively. He can't go over pick and rolls like he once was. He's not a phenomenal shooter, but he's gotten better. I'm interested to see how it plays out for the Knicks. They didn't really have to give up anything. It's going to be a small contract. OKC, not really sure what the play was there, buying him out. You thought maybe you could get something for him, but that is a very large contract.
I think the idea is they're hoping and they're expecting my guy down in New Orleans. They're expecting Zion Williamson to be available because I don't think, you know, unlike the, you know, NFL, I don't think you can tag a player. And I think the best you can do is make him a restricted free agent. But the idea is for Zion to go to New York when the opportunity presents itself for him to finally become a free agent. He wants to go to New York. And, but right now it's just interesting because I guess the question I would ask you is what teams do you think have bettered themselves thus far, you know, just a few days into free agency?
I think the Heat have. I think the Bulls really have. I think
the Lakers did.
I think the Lakers did because, Lakers did. And, again, to me, that Lakers team is going to be as good as AD allows them to be. AD is going to have to grow up and say, I'm playing the five.
He's got to stay healthy above all things.
Sure, I agree. But I do think Miami Heat, I do think that the Chicago Bulls got a lot better as well.
Brooklyn got a little bit better, too, getting Patty Mills. It's look, for them and the Lakers, it's all going to be about depth and having shooters. So, you know, we have to judge them from different prisms and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was a good pickup for – you're right, because he's a very good knockdown shooter. You look at him when he plays for Team Australia, he destroys. It's funny when you look in the Olympics, the guys around the countries playing different teams who dominate, who are bench warmers than other teams. This was Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. We'll be back live in studio tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. We are out of here.